Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer, not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, for healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Happy Easter. The Easter Show. This is my favorite show of the year. I hope it's going to be yours. Clouds today. Maybe sunshine tomorrow. Usually Good Friday. I've been clocking this for many, many years. Good Friday. Often that heavy layer of dense gray. Can't imagine why, can you? Often Holy Saturday. Usually we see the sun shine bright on Easter, no matter what they say. This show is going to connect a subject very close to my heart, to the meaning of Easter. The resurrection and science and why we've separated the two when we should have spent the last 2,000 years unifying the two. Because the two concepts, the two phenomena, that of science and that of the resurrection, are at odds with each other. One appears to deny the other, and I mean science denies the resurrection. Well, it does. And although I'm sure a lot of people won't agree to that, you're not being honest. Scientists do not see or put any stock, any faith in the spiritual realm. They've been separated. So either we don't discuss it or we deny it. There's no getting around that. Really, if you're in there rubbing elbows, sharing and participating in what we call the scientific community, the minute you begin to enter the non-scientific realm, oddly enough, what some of the geniuses call the creative realm, the creative scientific imagination, I mean reverse engineering. I mean that what science won't accord us is the opportunity to reverse engineer. What I mean by that is science doesn't allow us to make a claim based on nothing other than our dream state. There's an example. And then assuming that the inspiration is correct, to work backwards to find the truth. That is what science does not accord us. I cannot say into the scientific community that I know in my heart, in my soul, that there was a man named Jesus and that he resurrected, that he died, was buried after crucifixion, and rose from the dead into flesh and blood. I can't say that. I cannot say by the scientific paradigm, by what we have invested ourselves in, which makes our reality, I cannot say that I know that is true, and I'll make my choices based upon that truism. I'll draw my conclusions. I'll create my society, my social laws and customs. That is not something you can do and be called a scientist simultaneously. One is in direct conflict with the other. There's no two ways about that. That should not be denied, and anyone that denies that is either blind or lying. Now, that's a problem for me. It's a problem for me. In addition to which, it's insincere in the name of science, because if you study the history of science, much of what we understand today is just a reverse engineering event. By that, I simply mean that somebody gets up one day and says, I saw something in a dream. I know it's true. I know I'm being told something. And now I'm going to go out and substantiate it. You see, science works the other way around. Science says you're not allowed to do that. Science says that if you do that, you're out of the club. Science says that you have to go out there and sit on a box for as long as it takes for you to observe things in the physical realm, stuff you can see and maybe measure, put it all together, and then simply say, you know what? I got a hypothesis. And I'm going to take that hypothesis, and now I'm going to set up an experiment and blah, 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 and then I can say it's true. That's what science says. And if science says that anything else is bunko, well, welcome to 2019. That's the way it operates. That's bad. That's bad because, you see, then I don't have at least most of the rational paradigm of the present day world backing up the fact that Christ rose from the dead. You understand? You understand, my fellow Christians, that's the dilemma. You understand that most scientists are atheists. They have to be, because if they're not, well, then they're insincere scientists. They believe in the spiritual realm, and the two have nothing to do with each other. This is the crock of humanity, and it has to change. It has to change. Now, there is a TED's talk that you must, I'm going to post it to the show at the end of the show. There's a TED's talk by a guy named Spencer Wells. Spencer Wells, like dig a well. Spencer Wells is building a family tree for all humanity. It's the Spencer Wells talk on TED Talks. It's 20 minutes. You got to see it. It will blow your mind. It will blow your mind. You see, off Darwin and many others came a science called chordate morphogenesis. I was going to take it in college years ago at Fordham, didn't, but was well aware of its implication. Chordate morphogenesis is a biology class where it's called comparative anatomy. You compare the bone structure of stuff you dig up out of the ground. And based upon, and this includes all sorts of fossils and, you know, currently living animals, the collective effect of which is to piece together the history of evolution. You know, the Darwin thing. And you do it by looking at bones. We say you look at the phenotype of the population. Phenotype just means the outward appearance, not the DNA sequence, which is the genotype. You look at the outward appearance. So if you give me, you know, a monkey, a duck, a fish, a jellyfish, a paramecium or an amoeba, and you put them all over there, I could kind of tell you in which order they evolved onto the earth. Now, again, of course, religiously speaking, off some perceptions, this is bunko. You can't even put your stock in evolution. But you'll get my point in a moment. Traditionally, off Darwinian theory, you can take a bunch of animals and studying them in all sorts of ways we don't need to get into, you could figure out at about what time they appeared on the planet. Now, if you apply this to humanity, humans, well, way back, you know, remember the archaeologist that dug up Lucy, Australopithecus? I probably botched that word, I apologize, but look it up. Australopithecus, Leakey, the Leakeys, husband and wife archaeological team, South Africa, 4 million years ago or so. Comes this thing that's not an ape, it's got enough human quality to begin the Bee-Gee. That's where it started, with Lucy. And from that organism, we move right all the way up to us. And then we have to deal with Neanderthal. Now, there's a guy named Lloyd Pye. L-L-O-Y-D-P-Y-E. There's a name you should look up. You should know Lloyd Pye. He threw about as much great science into the notion that, well, it didn't really go from Lucy to Austro to Neanderthal to Cro-Magnon. It really didn't go that way. We have our common gorilla, our common ape man, and off that branch, many, many, many subdivisions of humanity occur. Now we've got a complicated thing occurring. Today we do. I'm going to get to the point now. It's not just Cro-Magnon. It's not just Neanderthal. There's Denisovans. What about Bigfoot? Java Man. If you study, if you get into the stuff by this guy Lloyd Pye, well, you're going to start to understand where I'm going. And that is to today in 2019. We're now constructing our sense of who came after who, and who branched out how, based on reading the genotype. The genotype's not the phenotype. The genotype is not what someone looks like. The phenotype is what someone's looks like. The genotype is we take a piece of your bone and we find out your DNA. This is more complicated when you're dealing with fossils that are 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 100,000 years old, but it can be done. And the conservative science, which has its value, which doesn't believe in God, doesn't acknowledge the spiritual community. Well, yeah, it does. They go to church on Sunday, maybe, but when it comes to what they do, there's no such thing as the spiritual realm. So they don't. But I can tell you, one thing they're good for, one thing their thick as a brick skulls are good for, is applying craft to reality. Meaning, they've got a system now that you call forensic archaeology, where you can get something that's old and you can piece together its DNA sequence. And when they come up with an answer, you can bet on it. They may mess up in other ways, but they're not messing up there. And you know what it's telling us? Well, go see the TED Talk. Get on YouTube, TED Talk, Spencer Wells is the name. More specifically, Spencer Wells is building a family tree. I'm going to throw it on the website after the show. It's mind-boggling. What they're coming up with is absolutely mind-boggling. For instance, they are certain, check this out, they are certain that 60,000 years ago, the caveman population, we'll call it, Neanderthal, whatever else, was decimated to only 2,000 people. Now, this is big-time genetics. These are the DNA guys. 2,000 years ago. 60,000 years ago. The population got down to 2,000 people. From 60,000 BC to today, human beings have put 7 billion people on the planet and gone from, well, whatever we were doing 60,000 years ago to what we're doing now. That is a staggering, staggering phenomenon. Now, I am going somewhere with this story today. Because have you ever done 23andMe or Ancestry.com? These are huge. These represent huge shifts in the way you will see your world. What's happening and happened with computers? There's no one that doesn't know what internet is now. There's no one that doesn't know what Facebook is. There's no one that's not on a computer. If you are alive, 99.9% of you understand the world has changed, and you have to be fluent with computers. That is happening with DNA. That is happening with genetics. You don't understand this. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. I am always, have always been ahead of the curve. I predicted that we mated with Neanderthal. I predicted it 30 years ago. Ever since I caught my mother putting an Easter egg under the couch and I uncovered at 4 years old the scam of the Easter Bunny, that was it. I became a scientist that day. I will turn over every rock, every stone, every boulder until I'm satisfied. And I'm telling you right now, what is happening with our understanding of the human tree in genetics is bringing us to staggering realities. And if we were honest with ourselves, yes, we're finding out there were many family trees we had no idea existed. And the evolution from A to B to C to D isn't what we thought it was. The family tree, the tree of life, is being rewritten as I speak today. We're finding out the similarities between populations that we never thought had any similarity. When you're finding out that the Icelanders, the people from Iceland, ought to be shaking hands with the Tanzanians of Africa, that they're more related perhaps to each other than they are to the Greeks, you've learned much. Spend the money on your ancestry. I could do another show on that. Now, here's the power line. Here's the punchline. The punchline is, for as much as we understand, it's what we don't understand that is of enormous significance. We don't understand what induces variability. We don't really understand the process through which we become different than each other. We don't really understand the forces that drive mutation. We don't really understand the forces that drive the change in the nucleotide sequences. We don't even know what half the genes code for. The genes code for proteins. We don't know how many proteins many of the genes code for. We don't know what the proteins do. We don't know what many of the genes do. The only thing we've got down are the nucleotide sequences. But I can tell you this, what we're approaching is the day at which, if we were honest with ourselves, we're going to have to throw up our arms and say, the biochemical paradigm is dead. We're going to throw up our arms and say the biochemical paradigm is dead. Because if you keep asking questions based upon our understanding of DNA and how it's evolved from however many years back you want to go, you're ultimately brought to the unforgiving task. The unforgiving task of trying to understand what drives mutation, and just the stresses of natural selection aren't good enough. They're not good enough. There is another paradigm coming after the DNA paradigm. and it will be the electromagnetic one. And once they're there, once the geneticists, the chemists, throw their hands up, they're going to have to talk to Christ. Because as far as I'm concerned, on Easter Sunday tomorrow, that is who we give thanks and praise to. The electromagnetic nature of Christ. Now, there's a hook into the DNA. There's a hook into the DNA. And that hook, I want to submit to you today, is simply that what we call the DNA matrix, the nucleotide sequence, what defines you, your genotype, is the last vestige of stability, the last brick before you're into the ethers. The reason the world at large holds hands and is focused onto the microchip of the DNA sequence is because we are at, in terms of the consciousness of society, of the world, at the brink of understanding that that DNA chip, that molecule, is the fence. It is the dividing line between the material plane and the ethereal plane. And this is exactly what resurrection is about. Christ was man. Christ was God. He was God the Son. He was God. And from the crucifixion of Good Friday to the resurrection of Easter Sunday, those lines were crossed. We went from the material into the ethers and then back into the material in 3 days. There's only one way to understand that. There's only one way to believe that. And that's to understand that the DNA is malleable. It is not solid state. It is electromagnetic. And this is the hope for our species. This is where you should find salvation. To me, this is what Christ came to tell us. That we are not doomed to the lowly destiny of the material plane. That you can change. That you can exceed yourself. That you can turn the vision into reality. That there is a formula. There is a mechanism. There is a proof. For those of you afflicted with illness, you have to consider the miracles that Jesus performed upon the sick. You have to consider that. And while we're so busy debating validities, we're so busy determining whether or not society at large, whether the Bible is mostly a fairy tale written in all sorts of metaphor that don't really mean what they say. Well, we're so busy debating that, we fail to really reverse engineer, to assume it's true and work backwards. And that's what we should be doing with these miracles. You see, because there's something built into these miracles that the sick could receive the miracle. Give me one example of Jesus performing a miracle on a non-believing Pharisee. Give me one example. Give me one example of any miracle in the New Testament performed on the, bestowed upon the non-believer. You see, you can't. Because they could not receive. You have to train yourself to receive. You have to develop a practice, a mechanism, a day-to-day. You have to get up in the morning and do the things to purify on every level so that you become more receptive to that vibrational force. And you see this when people heal. When people actually heal disease, the ones that I have seen, too few, unfortunately. Our culture disrespects this paradigm. But the ones I've seen will tell you they feel like they're becoming bodies of light. I find that very interesting. And I find it very interesting in the historical records that those people, the saints, the swamis, whoever you want to put into that group, train themselves in a way that ultimately creates a different language, a different experience of life. And it's always related to they become like light. The story of Christ is the story of light. The story of Christ is the man and a God, the God, who suffered for our sins. Our sins, it means he took it on. It means he was receptive to the pain of the world. And to speak his truth, he was nailed to a cross. And amidst it all, on the other side of the agony, came the resurrection. That's a metaphor. That is a metaphor for all of us. Whether we're sick or healthy, it's a metaphor. And it's a mechanism. And it's a way of life. And it includes my 413 shows. It really and truly does. I can't give it to you any more fundamentally than that. Cleanse and purify, my friends, and become the body of light. Learn to receive. Each day is a sacrament to purify your receptive capacities. Happy Easter. God bless you. We'll see you next week.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.